Yep, we're good.
All righty. We'll call the meeting together to order. This is the Joint Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization, and for the record, it's May 10, 2017. Colleagues, this is the first of, I think, three meetings, we hope, tonight, Monday, and Wednesday. We hope we can come to some consensus about the transportation plan we want to direct LC to put together. I guess if we need to take more time, we'll take more time, but we're getting short. One of the things I wanted to point out to you is in front of you is a schedule, the calendar, and you can see what's there, and it's getting tight. From the time we stop, we think we need the LC to have at least a couple of weeks to put something together. The first real decision date, if you will, or thing, is we're targeting May 31st as a public hearing date, giving a week after that if there's any amendments, and be back again on the 5th or the 7th of June if we needed another meetings to get a bill done. The real goal is to have something on the House floor by the middle of that third week in June and Senate the next week. And obviously, the issue is we don't have a lot of time. We're trying to give some direction, but once we start going on this, we don't have a lot of time. So what we had intended, as we said the other night at our meeting, we're going to walk through the issues and the proposal that was put out there collectively and answer questions and try to get some direction. I want to be real clear. We should look at this in terms of the fact that what we're putting out there is direction to LC. Certainly that doesn't bind anybody to what you'll take on a final vote at, hopefully, in early June. But it gets us started in the process, and it gives us a place to go. I think what you'll find as we start working through here is that we can make changes, but each of them, it's a little bit like pulling a string on a coat. When you start pulling it too far, the whole thing starts unraveling, but there's certainly some room to cut the string and maybe stop at some place and make some changes along the way. But the way we've got it set up tonight is I'm chairing from up here. Senator Boquist is going to lead us through the process, and again, we intended to plan for 3 days to go through this, and that's what we hope that we'll take. If we need to take more than that, we have some room to take a little bit more. We could set up a special meeting, but time's tight. I guess the point I'm trying to emphasize is we don't have a lot of time if we want to get a package, because we got drafting to do, and we could be hopeful that maybe we'll be done before July 10th. But anyway, so we're going to start with there. Has anybody got any questions on the process of what we're going to do tonight before we do? Oh, one other thing. As we go along here, and I guess I would say this to the audience too, if you have questions that you want to get more information or something, you should send them to Patrick, to the committee's website, so we have them all in one place. We'll try to make sure that we cover those up as we go along. If you don't get them answered tonight or in the next couple of them, I guess if you don't get them answered tonight or Monday night, you're losing room. So you better get them in quick. Brian?
Thank you, colleague. If you ever get sleepless nights, just read Mason's rules. What we're going to do is a committee in the round. It's actually in the rules, and we've never done that to my lifetime that I know of in this building. Now, maybe Senator Monroe has done a committee in the round before, just put us in there. The purpose, colleagues, is not to get everybody to say I'm voting yes or no. The purpose is to be able to flush out all five work groups on OLIS. For those of you who have your laptops, all five of the work group presentations have been loaded up on OLIS so you can see it. What the committee co-chair has asked me to be able to do is to walk through each of those basic work groups, talk about each of the slides. We do have a list of questions. This, you know, not mandatory reporting. It's basically a list to kind of guide it along, to ask questions, to get people's input, so that we at least have some sort of consensus, so that the drafters who are not in the room, but just so you know, if you have a question that's a drafting question or a technical question on transportation or a technical legal questions, they're all busily doing their normal jobs right now late at night, and they are on the screen, and our good committee staff is ready to dial their five-digit number and ask them to come down here and explain an answer or something along the line. And we do have ODOT staff in the back. Up on the screen, as I told you before, on Monday, all we're going to do is go back through the key slides that are in here. The very first work group that we had that had substance in it, if you'll recall, of the five groups was the maintenance and preservation work group. I was asked by the co-chairs to actually do a little whiteboard work there to refresh everybody that they fully understand the implications of what is called the 50-30-20 split. That's where 50% goes to the state, 30% goes to the counties, and then 20% goes to the cities. I'm going to walk through the whiteboard just very briefly because I asked to do through, take any questions so that you're kind of aware of that and see it visually. I am going to use a magic number of $300 million. It is a magic number because math is not my strong suit, and we're only going to use that number because that's an easy one to plot out, and I think many of you heard the same rumor out there that it should be approximately initially a $300 million project. So I'm going to sort of leave here, go to the whiteboard, and walk you through so everybody fully understands when whatever we do, when you start cutting it out, that you know $300 million quickly becomes $150 million, which quickly becomes another number and goes down. So,
as you're going up there, Brian, I might add that the $300 million, what that represents, is the starting place on the 6 cent plus the $20 registration increase. That's where the $300 million comes from.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator, curious, is Senator Boquist going to mic up for this?
Probably not, because we're in the house.
I probably don't need a mic, Rick. We will call the committee in the round. I believe your clerk is gone for the day, so you won't be able to get that ruling. The secretary is already on my side. So.
We would, Representative, but we don't know how to do it.
We're not that technologically advanced. Colleagues, if you do $300 million initially, if you look at the proposal that was before you and what we've traditionally been doing, right off the top of the $300 million, comes out $10 million for safe roads, okay? Which, as you know, you can do the math, then leaves you $290 million left over. The next breakout that happens, as you know, is it goes two directions. One goes to the highway fund now, because we're talking preventive, we're talking road maintenance. This is highway fund, this is gas dollars, this is registration, this is title fees that's out there. You end up, as you know, with about $145 million on each side. Once you come back to the opposite side, which is $145 million, so remember you started with $300 million, at the state, I'm going to do the city and counties first, the cities end up with approximately 30% of that, okay? And 30% of that, $145 million, is roughly $87 million a year.
That's right? The counties.
Counties. $87 million a year. I'm using Senator Byers' cheat sheet, not mine, so I might be rusting off. Then what happens is the cities get approximately $58 million of that, and you see how the number goes down very quickly, even at $300 million per year. And then if you'll recall, the cities presently under the plan is to $2.5 million of that would then go to the small cities. So this number is then again a minus $2.5 million. So if you're looking at the city and the county half of this, 300 goes to 145 very quickly, and then goes to 87 and 58. And that's just if you're doing the whole amount. That doesn't mean if you're doing any bonding on the side. On the opposite side, if you remember, we have ARCs, which is in the small cities portions that have been put out there. The ARCs is $10 million right off the top. So you take $10 million off for ARCs that you have, and then you end up taking $2.5 million out of this, and this is the small cities portion that we did on our side. It's the name is less important than the total amount, and then you end up with $132 million, okay, out of that original $300 million left on the state side. If you recall, in highway fund bonds, just so everybody understands, everybody says, why don't you bond $1 billion? Okay. The problem with bonding $1 billion is you started with $300 million and now we only have $132 million left, and the bonding ratio is basically 1 to 3. 1 to 3 in the highway fund in order to keep our bond rating and everything else. So if you took $45 million, and again I'm gonna blame Senator Beyer because you'll do it three times $45 million is 135, you can't do that, but it's on the sheet. Okay. This is
rounding error.
So if you take that $145 million, which is the maximum amount you could bond, that's not what we're proposing, but the maximum amount that you could bond, that bond comes across to this side. This is basically your $45 million would be your debt service. That would give you a total one time for 25 years. Total one time for 25 years, a grand total of $540 million for projects. Now, if the state was going this alone, here's the example. If the state was going this alone and we had to use this fund to pay for, we'll say, Rose Quarter, that's $450 million by itself. And there's no money left over hardly. The other point that's on here, the most important part, is we all heard about need, is once you take that out, you only have $87 million left total per year increase for preservation, maintenance, seismic, and all the things that every one of your work groups says bridges. That we would need.
Bridges.
And you can see it doesn't take very long for it to all disappear into places that most of us are still wondering at times where it goes to. But so any number we do when we say it's a $300 million project or it's a $200 million proposal or a $400 million proposal, just remember, I mean, you start cutting it in half very quickly and the number of dollars and cents goes down. The interesting thing about this, though, is that if you did 6 cents, one of the people keeps in the minute, even if you do something like 6 cent gas tax, the important part of this stair step going this way is it starts to go up and it does start to whittle away at all those issues. Because if you remember, you do 6 cents and then later, just say hypothetically, you do it 2 years, you do another 2 cents and another 2 cents, and you go out to that 14 cent number that was used as a starting point, you do start to generate additional funds. But remember, this money is now gone for 25 years, one-time expense. You went to dinner, you went to Ruth Chris's, you spent your $540 million, and you're paying for this for the next 25 years. So keep that in mind as we go through and start talking about numbers, that the split disappears very, very quickly.
Thank you. So there's one thing missing up there, I think, that's part of this calculation. Haven't the counties agreed to take $5 million, like the small cities have, and they agreed to take $5 million off the top of theirs to go to...
That is absolutely correct, okay. And we're going to get to that.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to get to that, where they have been gracious to help out, I believe the number's 29 of their counties, but we have that answer as we go along here.
And actually, I would add that $2.5 million on the small cities on that side would come over to match the $2.5 million over there. So that $58 million is reduced by that. The small cities get that.
Right. But the important part is to remember, anything you say in a number gets cut in half right off the bat after you take out the first $10 million that's on the top of it. And we have this in the slides, but the co-chairs want to make sure you grasp that, you know. And we wanted the public to understand that when you say you're going to do $100 million, that it immediately reduces automatically, and then it gets cut in half going across the board. So,
Representative?
I'm just a little slow. I've seen this several times, but I still don't have it. So the $300 million, so what's that first $10 million that comes off the top?
The first $10 million off of the top is the safe roads to the safe schools. This is safe routes to schools.
Oh, okay.
This is safe routes to schools that comes
Thank
off
you.
The top.
Senator, I think that where we're maybe getting confused is that you're just doing this as illustrative of how quickly $300 million disappears.
Right.
This is not speaking to any proposal. This is simply an example of why $300 million sounds like an enormous amount of money, but this just shows how little it buys. And to put a finer point on it, of the $540 that would be available as a one-shot deal for projects, Rose Quarter is $450.
Yeah. Well, the $300 million actually represents the first year of the proposal. Senator Monroe.
But the $450 for the Rose Quarter, wouldn't that be shared half by the state and half by the local governments?
We're ahead of ourselves now.
Okay. We'll get to that.
What we're trying to do, and what the co-chairs wanted to make sure is you saw the illustration, or no matter what number you hit, we don't get to go to dinner. Even though they issued a check to Senator Monroe for $300 million, it's not our money to spend, even under the existing formula. And we're actually going to have one of those questions come up is, do you agree with the existing formula or not? But the important part they wanted was everybody to realize and think in the back of their mind sort of the way the structure is right now, which is a 50-30-20 structure. So that, colleagues, everybody remembers that the bridges are old,
Pavement conditions is fine. We talked about why the present isn't already working, and we're really wanting to get almost right off the bat. One of the very first things to discuss before we move into the 50-30-20 split is this, the type of plan. It's been drafted right now for basically a 10-year plan, 10-year financing plan, or 10 to 12-year initial financing plan. It shoots out across that line for 20 years. And really, the very first thing is anybody's input in terms of, do we think in 15 to 20 years, 10, 15, and 20 years, or do we think, as we've done in before, 6 years?
Representative.
Is that a question?
That's a question.
Okay.
Or a dissent. Well, and not everybody has to answer, Madam Representative.
Okay. Well, if you ask that question, I think that is fundamental, and I think that what this conversation has been during this last 8 months has been that we didn't want to do it exactly like it had been done for the last 40 years, because we ended up with gaps in service. We ended up with 900, years of bridges to repair. And we also were not thinking about anything but single projects. We wanted to think of it as a system, a balanced system, a system that had a variety of modes and also creative enough funding that you could actually start to lay out your funding so the funding was there at the right time and where you could save money on certain parts of it because of using cash versus bonding. And so for me alone, I can say, and I'm okay with saying that I think that was what we agreed to work on, and that's what we laid out as far as some of our basic assumptions in some of the subcommittee work that we did.
Thank you. Any other additional comments? I mean, everybody sort of think big, think long.
Thank you, Senator Byer. So, Senator, I just want to understand when it says 20-year, and I'm all right with it, don't get me wrong, the 20-year recovery plan, does the way the plan is laid out now, with all the assumptions there, do we actually recover, meaning that in 20 years we'd be back to regular, taking care of things and things would be brought up to the level that's accounted for?
To our understanding, if you go out 20 years, we address most of the issues except for the congestion piece, in which we cannot stop Portland from growing. No disrespect to Portlandia behind us. But we do, if you run that line out, as was pointed to us, is as you start to and you actually address those issues and get us into a position, at least in the cities and counties and in the major arterials out there, that we address that over a 20-year period. Now, we cannot bind a future legislature, everybody knows,
no.
And everything is bound to change. But that is the basic concept we're trying to go for. Senator?
One of the things to keep in mind when we're looking at this is if you remember, Senator Boquist is laying out like the congestion problem, all of these things, you can't snap your fingers and you start them. There's the planning and the EISs and all of that. If we just said, yep, this is exactly what we want to do, it takes a while to get there, and the implementation would run you beyond 10 years just to get them accomplished timely. But as we've looked at it and laid out the 6 cents and the staggered increases, by year 10, your revenue stream is right at or pretty darn close to, say, from there forward, you can maintain the system at the levels we said we want.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Senator.
This is slightly tangential to the point, but I started out this whole odyssey of talking about the plan with a notion of continuous improvement. And I would hope that as we move forward, that we would contemplate a maintenance schedule for the new projects that we're building so that we don't allow this backlog of repairs that becomes so overwhelming, but rather take care of it as we go, which would be perhaps a departure from where we've been historically.
Couldn't agree more, Senator.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with what Senator just said. You know, my whole thought on this whole thing, Senator Boquist, is go big or go home, plan well, or plan to fail.
Well, unfortunately, being a military officer, a lot of times we plan and end up failing anyway.
Okay. There you go.
Any other comments? We'll move on.
So the general sense that people have, a lot of people being quiet, is that we should be looking at long-term implementation to get us back on track.
Yeah.
The alternative to that, the experience we've had over the last 25 years is we we pass a revenue increase and then we wait 10 years and do another one and wait another 10 years and that's kind of gotten us to where we are. But but we're trying to get a sense, and is that, are people generally in agreement with that? Senator Girard?
I'm not a go big or go home person. I personally think we're doing a huge injustice because I believe very strongly that anything too big will go on the ballot and will be defeated and will put us 10 years behind. So I'm one to take small bites of the apple. Took us three decades to get in this mess. It'll take us a little while to get out.
Keep in mind, this is 10 years. The alternative to get to the same place would be to have the assumption that we would have to come back every session and vote again. Our track record has not been good at doing that.
The only reason I stop at this slide right here is just to remind everybody that what's on the wall to my right, which is gas tax title registration, is in fact constitutionally dedicated to, quote, the highway fund, which is sort of a mythical creature, so you all know what it really means, is if you raise the money, you must spend it on the highways. It's not really a fund that's out there. It's how you spend the money. Highway fund we talked about. I want to come.
Senator, excuse me. Representative Vance?
I want to follow up on Senator Girard's point. Do you have a number, Senator, that you have in mind in lieu of what was suggested?
Well, when you go out 10 years, you're talking $1 billion. $1 billion is $270 per man, woman, and child in this state. I'm sorry, that's not going to fly to the voters. Everyone has said that if you keep it down and we do a little bit each year, which Senator Byers says we haven't done a very good job on, but if I don't think the problem was really brought forward until recently as to how bad it is and how we do have to do a little bit each year. But if we just do a little bit each year, it's not going to be one giant vote. You think of all the things that are in this package, and you ask yourself, if it goes to the ballot, are they going to vote for it? And I think the overwhelming answer is, hell no.
So, did you follow up?
Well, the follow-up would be, Senator, do you have a number in lieu of this one? Or I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'm just asking.
Well, yeah, I put out a plan that would raise actually 12 cents over 4 years with a sunset. And it is fairly simplistic.
12 cents over 4 years.
4 years, no, that wouldn't, well, all it would do is give the OTC taxing authority for 3 cents per year for 4 years. Boom. Or you could do it here and do 3 cents a year for the next biennium, which would be 6 cents, which is what you're asking for in the initial go-around, which is fine. I can do that. But you throw in everything else that goes with this, it just, there's no movement on clean fuels. For us in rural Oregon to say that we're going to accept clean fuels, which there was my understanding we're trying to cap at 8 cents, and you add that to everything else that's up there, and we were told anything over 4 cents is going to be toast. So it's if it goes to the ballot, anything over 4 cents.
Just to point out, the plan that was proposed over 4 years is 8 cents.
Yeah, that's fine,
Mr. Chair.
But how much is going to go in the bill, Lee? Are you going to have it so it's 2 cents per year for the next 10 years? That gets you to $1 billion.
But what you're suggesting then is you would come back in 4 years and vote on another 2 to 4 cents.
That's right.
So you'd end up in the same place,
but somewhere close. But you piecemeal it.
Representative McClain.
The other element that I think is important besides what's the size or how much is the fact that there's a variety of tools that we've discussed, and the complexity of tiering and stepping is because there's certain dollars and certain pots and certain tools that can only be used for certain modes. So we'd have to make sure that in that 4 cents or whatever that we had money that could go for transit and dredging in ports. And so I think that's part of the complication, but it's also part of wanting to have a balanced system.
Senator.
Thank you, Senator Byer. So one of the things that I like about the work that's been done and why I like this long-term plan is that it will enable the state and local jurisdictions to do appropriate planning.
Yes.
Because now we're creating a stable funding source, and I guess I can't speak for all of us here, but for those of us who are members in the building, we suffer, or at least I feel I suffer every day by the unstable revenue streams that we have here. And so when we're talking about education, we talk about so many things, and it's very, very difficult when we don't have a stable revenue stream. And with this proposal, we know what money will be coming in, and so people can take appropriate steps. They know when the revenue stream is going to be, unless I guess a future legislature could come in and kind of take it away by chance. But anyway, I like the idea of we're basically trying to create a stable revenue stream.
So before we get too far down the road on numbers, because that opportunity is coming, if you look at the lower left-hand side of this slide, I mean, one of the fundamental questions is going forward, do we want to keep the 50-30-20 split? That's when if you raise $100 million, then 50% after the subtraction goes to the state, 20% goes to the cities, and 30% goes to the county. So I just want to put that out there to make sure everybody's on board. There's been some discussions by members in the legislature, I don't know on this committee, that have said, okay, no, we should do the split a different way. Any comments or just move on?
Important to keep in mind that the numbers we've thrown out there, that $5.9 billion is not what you get in 1 year. That's the cumulative amount you get in a decade.
Yes.
Senator.
For the sake of discussion, I'm going to suggest we maintain 50-30-20. We've got enough else going on here. I don't think that's a fight we need to fight.
I would have to agree.
Okay. The next step, okay. The question that we need to bring
we
in
have
before
consensus
we get to
on that, I'm just checking.
Okay. That's an amen.
People agree we're not going to touch the formula.
Well, we've made one right. Milestone. We've agreed to one thing.
Yeah, good.
Thank you. That makes life easier.
So we're moving on.
Well, unless we just grab all the county's money.
Speaking of county money, it's good lead-in, Senator Johnson. We wanted to
Judge
talk
MacArthur's
briefly
watching
before,
you.
Again, going to the numbers, because if you remember, if you take the county money and once you split it up, is the discussion we had. The counties themselves, if you look at the spreadsheet or the screen that's up there, the counties themselves put forth a plan to say they would take $5 million out of whatever money they had, and they would help the smaller counties. And that's a tiered program that's on OLIS that you can look at. There's actually 29 counties who would get an increased amount from what they normally get today, and it's a plan put together by the counties themselves. And we want to put that up there to make sure everybody's aware of that and see if there's any problems with members of the counties helping themselves.
We discussed this a lot, and we thought that was very magnanimous on the part of the county.
The only thing I would say is that I suspect that number may go down if the overall number goes down very much.
Okay. Second portion was the small cities discussion that we had. I believe, and I think somebody from the cities is back here, I believe there was initial discussions at one point of $2 million that they would do something similar to this. The proposal that was put forth after the work groups, and remember, the proposal that's before us right now is a proposal of everybody in the committee of the whole, because this is really nothing more than us putting the five work group pieces together, and this is what the various work groups said. So please don't say this is Boquist's proposal. I'm certain it'll be quoted in the Oregonian tomorrow, and my phone will auto-dial up. But in the small cities area, once again, what we said is we didn't think it was enough money, and the idea was take $2.5 million out of our side, $2.5 million from the state side, and add it to the small cities side, and then the small cities would actually have enough money in there that they could utilize. Once again, recall the discussion that we had in the work groups and the discussion we had yesterday, is this a mechanism in which, though the funding would go into the pot at ODOT, that five small cities would be sort of an advisory board from the small cities, and those small cities would then make the recommendation, as Senator Johnson pointed out before, of what projects they could do. And we're not going to hamstring them to $50,000. It's the five of them would work together and decide whether it's they're going to do $250,000 this year for one and work on it, and actually the small cities take their allotment and work together with themselves. And is there more information?
Senator?
If the city and county provision is now in the package, will that take ODOT out of the grant business to cities and counties? And so ODOT will not be making lists with promises to cities and counties. They will not pick the projects. The city and county family will pick the projects. And then who will do the projects?
The cities will do the projects, to my understanding. And I'll let some of the other members, we've had this same discussion. Exactly what you just talked about is exactly that what was discussed from the work group and exactly that we've discussed in the four of us. The actual pick of the projects would be done by the small cities submitting it to the advisory board. ODOT would be the staffing mechanism for that. But that five small city advisory board made up of the same cities that get this are the ones that would make the decisions for their colleagues.
Yeah.
That's the intent, unless you have a better idea, and we're all ears.
And I don't think there was a visit that we made in our tour that we didn't hear about the small cities and the struggles they have with the funding level. So from my standpoint, however we ultimately structure it, we've got to do something of this nature, because otherwise there's no chance they're ever going to get projects done.
Senator?
Just to nuance this a little bit further, so the family of cities goes out with their money, and they accept proposals, and theoretically they're taking the ones that rise to the top. They can fund them more, which means they may exhaust the amount of available resources before everybody gets a turn at bat. But it is up to the community of small counties and the community of small cities to chart their own course and to make their own decisions about what projects would move forward.
In the cities, you're absolutely correct. There's actually an outline on OLIS that tells you the county process. You guys have copies. I guess the county is self-doing it themselves, but you're absolutely correct on the small cities. And for example, if you just took this and said in a year you were going to have approximately $5 million in the next year, you'd have a new grant proposal. You would hope the cities, except for NHTSA, I think is the one that you don't like.
I love NHTSA. Representative Benz, I love NHTSA. That's a visionary project.
I just didn't like the bump outs.
Okay.
Representative Benz.
Just some damn ODOT bulb outs.
Okay. So it could, this time it would be a small cities bulb out. So if they decided to do a bulb out in Vail instead this time, it would be the cities making that determinant. That's the basic concept, unless somebody else has more input.
Representative Benz.
I just wanted to mention Vail already has bulb outs, just so you know.
she noticed.
Well, on the back here of the is what the small cities, or excuse me, the low population counties would end up with. If they're not small counties, they're huge counties, and that's why the suggestion. But you'll note up in the very small print in the upper left-hand corner, it does assume new revenue of $85 million. And Senator Boquist has written $87 million up there. So as Senator Beyer points out, if it's not $300 million, that $5 million would have to shrink. But this is allocated to those counties, so there's no group deciding what projects. They just get the money.
For the counties.
On the city side, I was going to ask Senator Boquist if you could go back. Did you say one person from a small city in from each region makes up the five?
That's correct.
Right. So, and then that group, there would have to be some sort of detail in how they rotate and how they select these projects. But it would be 166 cities, small cities.
That's correct.
Number.
That's correct.
And
number.
So it would be... everybody isn't going to get something every year, that's for sure, but it's going to be much better than the five-year turnaround that we've experienced with the $1 million. At $50,000 a pop, and I think we suggested something higher than that.
Senator, you can follow.
Would it be possible for the small cities to contract with ODOT, recognizing ODOT's expertise in construction?
Right.
Some of the small cities may not have the horsepower to actually, Matt's saying yes, to actually manage a project so that they could use ODOT as their agent.
Yes, I would assume they could probably contract with the counties, too, is it my guess.
Matt's shaking his head yes,
which is why they're back here. Are there other suggestions for this? Because once again, just remember, legal counsel is looking at all of your comments and feverishly writing, so I don't have to. And I would point out, before she calls on Senator Taylor, the purpose of the county system, if you look at it, this is, you know, a pre-annualized basis, and so which they can actually do long-term planning on this, which is what they asked for us instead of bonding.
Senator Taylor.
I guess I just want a little more understanding about how, with 166 cities, mathematically, the sum of money, I mean, that money goes quickly. I mean, that's just gone. pretty quickly. And so, and I know this is over a longer period of time. I mean, how do we know? I just want to understand the representation process for the smaller cities.
Should understand also that they still would get their formula number.
Okay.
So they would get a little bit, but when you get down to those small cities, I think the number we heard out when we were listening to this or whatever it is, it's like one of the places the mayor said, you know, we can take our allocation and save it for 10 years and pave a block.
Okay.
Yeah.
Presently, I think the city's back. Presently, it's $1 million, I believe, right. And it's a $50,000 grant. And so what the proposal here, after listening to the cities and came out of the work group, is that if you have now $5 million, and instead of limiting it to $50,000, you would have, for example, NHSSA, who wants not to do a bulb out but has some project that might be a $125,000 project, they would submit it through the process, and then five smaller counties, or five smaller city elected officials who represent a city in each of the five regions would then go through the selection process. And as you note, they have $5 million a year, and they would allocate that money out in that year. And then the project list would start over. And yes, you can do all kinds of stuff, but the basic theme is that, you know, a city might only get a grant every 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years based on what they were putting in, but instead it would be enough money to actually do something other than pay for the sidewalks or the bulb out that Senator Johnson doesn't like.
Representative McClay.
Well, my understanding was that the cities and the counties were there in the subgroup when this was being discussed. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't had a single city or county say they didn't think this was an improvement. So if those people are out there, you need to let us know, because my inclination would be that we would go forward. Both Senator Winters and Senator Johnson said we've got plenty to talk about.
Right.
And if they're happy with that particular plan forward, I think we could certainly have a sense of being in favor.
I'm sorry, Senator Beyer. Just for the five, you said five elected, an elected official from the five regions. There's a lot of elected officials in each of the five regions. So are
no,
they
this
going,
is small cities.
Small cities, I know, but there's still a lot of people to, I'm just trying to understand that one little piece there, but who ends up being on that five person? The five people.
There's an appointment process, a draft appointment process put together, which were open for input. At this point, you have the city. So the way it was described and outlined is that the city association itself, right, would make a recommendation for the appointment of each of those individuals, right? That appointment would be done so that you have one from each region. You have the advisory board, and then the management, because presently the ODOT oversees this structure right now, and so they would still oversee it in terms of administration and helping to administrate it, because that's where the money's at. And then, for example, if it was, and as you know, unfortunately we have volunteers. Not every council member or mayor has the ability to spend the time to be on an advisory board that meets several times a year, if not quarterly. And that's the structure that we're talking about right there, is that once they're appointed to that board, okay, and you have OTC is over the top of the money, so OTC is approving the board appointments, is my understanding, and then that advisory board is, of course, receiving the proposals, and a lot of the staff work, of course, is still being done by ODOT.
Representative Benz?
No, I would just suggest that we have somebody draft something up so we can look at it, as opposed to us trying to design it.
Right.
That's why we're here.
Cool.
Okay. If you remember, Representative.
Find somebody to delegate it to that's lurking behind us there, or you. And
that's called Heidi.
Well, it might be, if I may, Mr. Chair, it might be small cities. And just say, hey, bring us something at our next meeting Monday night and put it on them.
This came out of a work group. Your work group, by the way, I believe. Representing Pence. It was your work group that
League
came
of
from.
Oregon cities that we could ask to facilitate that.
Exactly.
Right. Representative Smith? No? Okay. Are we good with this?
We're good with this.
All right.
Okay. We do want to go on and talk. We're going to come back to money, but we wanted to talk about user paying. This is another portion of this. This is the whole concept going into the future. And this happens to be what's on here in the registration piece. This is part of what's on there. This is highway fund money. And the fundamental question for the group is, despite it coming out of the work group, we had the presentation, is are we in agreement, or we conceptually believe we should start moving towards user pay? That's the first thing, and that is who uses the road pays. And then the second question, specifically as an example here, is title and registration. Do we start down the road in title and registration fees in which user pays? If you remember, the concept that came out of the work group that's on here right now is the lowest mileage pays a lower fee for title and registration because they burn more gasoline, and so the combination of the lower registration and title with the higher gasoline that they're burning then balances them out. And then average is average, and then the higher end has a higher fee because it burns less gasoline. So there's two real questions here. One is do we agree we're going to move towards a user pay system or just use the same old gas tax and watch it go downhill? Or, and the second ask is do you believe in a tiered system? Now, Representative Rayfield put forward a very good proposal that's like seven or eight tiers. It's scientific. Three-tiered, the reason it was recommended to you, and the committee members from my committee know, is that just the implementation in a legacy computer system that the state owns at DMV or elsewhere makes implementation anything more than three tiers very complicated. And this complication here could, in fact, take anywhere from six to 18 months to implement by itself. So there's the sort of question for discussion.
Senator Monroe, then Senator Johnson.
Yeah, some of us have been working for literally a decade trying to figure out how to get electric cars to pay a little bit of their fair share for using our roads. Mm-hmm. And this gets at that. So I applaud the subcommittee that came up with this idea, and I certainly support it.
Senator Johnson?
I just raised this question, and it will come up in one of our other slides that we talk about, and that is about the work that ODOT is already doing on its computer transformation planning, and whether or not at this juncture it's possible to recalculate the scope to include any other adjustments that we're asking DMV to undertake.
That's why we're here. That's why he's here.
And as long as you're coming up, Mr. Garrett, the other question that we haven't gotten to yet, but it was whether or not DMV was capable of participating in any kind of a tolling exercise, given that they're not completely doing cost recovery on some of their across-the-counter transactions now. But my bigger macro question is, how far down the road are you with scoping with a vendor for your computer transformation, and are we going to screw that up and lose money?
Okay. And we're not going to answer the tolling question yet.
I know, but I'm just saying DMV may be called upon to do other things, and I don't want to waste money or set that project back by asking DMV to take on responsibilities that they're not geared up for, and you cannot change the scope to accommodate.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Matthew Garrett. I'm the director of the Department of Transportation. Senator Johnson, to your question. So as we've engaged this discussion, we believe that given where we are with the evolution of the service transportation program that you're talking about, the DMV computer system, that we could engage January of 2019. We would like a year. We can engage in a different way of doing business if, let's just say, January of 18 is the go date. Let us engage that in a different mechanism. We can handle that with the existing legacy system, but we are ready and stand ready to implement with the new system in January of 2019. That would be our preference.
Representative Ivey and then Representative Smith.
Thank you. So I just have to say for the record, people have heard me say this before, my preference part of this package would be when we start moving more directly to a user pay system, which we had a bill that which we considered, and I agreed we moved it off. So if this is the only way we start moving there, then I'm supportive of that. But I still personally think, given the size of this package, and if we're looking out 10 years or 20 years, we ought to, at least as part of the work to follow this immediately, we ought to talk about where we move to a road user fee and get off of the gas tax.
Okay, to follow up that, so you get a little bit of information in the congestion work group, and it was actually raised by one of the reporters sitting in the back of the room or on the videotape. You will recall, at least the members of our congestion work group, we talked about expanding the pilot program size from what it is right now to encompass an entire MPO, for example, a lane, just as an example, the lane MPO, so that we had a test base of hundreds of thousands versus what we have now, which is in line with what Representative Lively has, that is actually buried in the weeds of these and will be buried in the 400 pages somewhere too, which is looking to ensure that one of those MPOs is willing to step up. One of them has, I'm not going to say who it is, and look at this as a possibility to make sure that this would work statewide. Thank versus you. The three or four thousand that you have now.
Thank you.
That answer your question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My question is directed to the committee, not down below. When you read this, it seems to make sense. But intellectually, if you push pause and ask the question, is it about mileage or is it about depreciation on the road? I'm looking at U.S. News and World Report here, and it has the Ford Fiesta. That's, I don't know, a couple of us could probably lift up and carry around the room. And the depreciation they're doing on our highways is next to nothing, where my Chevy extended cab 1 ton loaded down is probably tearing up the roads much more than that. And so I'm trying to figure out where higher mileage with the Ford Fiesta should have to pay a higher fee versus my 1 ton perhaps has average mileage or lower mileage, but is tearing up the roads much more than that.
But keep in mind,
can we have that conversation of, is it about depreciation or is it about penalizing for mileage?
Representative Bentz.
Thank you. So we can ask Director Garrett, but my recollection from serving all those years on the Rough Tough Committee suggests that the intuitive thought that the smaller car wears out the road less quickly than your pickup is probably incorrect. But we have Director Garrett sitting there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bentz to Representative Smith. Yeah, there's a threshold issue when we're talking about wear and tear on the roadway, and you really have to get up to that 26,000 pounds, and that's a demarcation between the light and the heavy classes that we speak to. So not a whole lot of difference between that Fiesta and your F-150 or whatever you said you drive.
I've been educated. Thank you.
But a follow-up. Director Garrett, the fact of the matter is we're also talking about congestion, and that car is taking up space.
Yeah.
And that's as important as the weight of the car in this congestion discussion that we're having. So we just can't leave that piece. The pickup and the car, not that much different. Am I correct there?
No, yes, sir, you are.
So I would share with you, Mr. Chair, my paradigm has just been corrected. I come from Eastern Oregon. I wasn't thinking of congestion. You're right. This little Ford Fiesta takes up space. So I do stand corrected, committee. Mm. That's great, Cliff. Thank you.
Anyone else? Go ahead.
User pay?
Moving on. Before we jump off that, just trying to follow up, does that make sense to people?
Yes.
I guess, I mean, I don't want to be committing necessarily to this versus a gas tax, and is there ever a consideration of some sort of combination of the two?
I can't hear her.
I mean,
sorry, I said it again.
I got it. What Senator Taylor is asking, is it one or the other, is it a combination of the two? And it's the, once again, so you understand what we're saying here, is you have two mechanisms here. You have the Ford Fiesta, which gets X amount of gas mileage, right? Which means it uses, because it gets higher gas mileage, it uses less gas. Versus my diesel 250, 2500 Ram, right? It, of course, would have a lower mileage vehicle. It would pay a lower title and registration fee, but I make up the difference on the opposite side on the gas tax. And so what we're trying to do is move towards an equilibrium. If it was the best equilibrium and we had a 21st century computer system and we could implement Mr. Rayfield's plan, which has 7 tiers and has all of the environmental calculations known to personkind, I'm being genetically correct here, we could do this formula. But what we're saying is start at a 3-tiered position and then in the bill task OTC to start developing exactly what Senator Taylor said, is what are the alternative mechanisms out there? What is a better way to do this?
Representative Bentz?
So just to build on that point, we had discussed at quite a bit of length whether or not to add an additional registration fee in on electric cars or plug-ins, because this just did not get us there on the numbers that we were using, because we were using pretty balanced numbers that had little to do with much of anything, to be honest with you. So the question we would be asking, I suppose, is what are those numbers? What are those numbers? And I don't think we had reached that point, at least with any, am I remembering correctly?
We were. We know that based on your research, Representative, that the average car in Oregon is $150 a year.
I got that.
So they're still going to be paying that, but we talked about asking electric vehicles, because they're not going to pay any gas tax. We were kicking around a number of $100 to $125 as an additional registration fee.
If we decided not to do that, but that is a function of what we put on lowest, average, higher, whatever those numbers might be, because if there was a huge difference between the higher mileage cars and the lowest, then it would make no sense to do what we're discussing. But I don't think we discussed that. I think we were doing it in a much more arbitrary one-third in kind of a approach. But
had you listened into the congestion work group presentation, it actually has what we proposed out of there was $10, $20, $30 increases. So you basically increase the lowest $10, the medium $20, the next one $30. And then we would task ODOT to come, and ODOT and OTC to start researching this to get closer. And from our group work group, we looked at the Rayfield plan, which actually is really good. It's just you need a 22nd century computer to make the thing work, along with all kinds of data. It's just start at the three-tiered, $10, $20, $30 is the initial point. If you remember in the revenue planner, which is not a revenue estimate, it's just a planning tool, is that it has a balance in it that says $20, and that balance in $20 really is formulated to do 10, 20, 30. And that's the discussion, you know, to be had by the committee of the round here, is that a starting point to be considered, because we're talking dollars and cents now.
And if I put a finer point on it, that was the arbitrary standard, 10, 20, 30. The question then would be, if we adopted that arbitrary standard, because it doesn't have much to do with actual mileage, we would have to wait some years for that to happen. Do we tack on another $153 to electric cars, or reduce by 10 the extra $10 they're paying? That's the question.
And that is more of an, at this point, is more of an equity or a fairness question than it is a financial, because we're only looking at EVs as less than 1% of the fleet.
But, Mr. May, if I may?
Yeah.
But there's been some that suggest this is horribly unfair because the higher mileage folks are paying so god dang much more. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is they're not on that arbitrary standard of 10, 20, 30. It needs to be pointed out that they aren't paying what they should be if we choose not to do the equity piece.
Right. Did I miss somebody? I'm not used to having to look quite this far on both sides.
So if you're looking at numbers, because that's where we're into the number category right now, just so you know, the question is in the tiering, I mean, do you do the original discussion that came out of the first work group, ours was 10, 20, and 30. And then the question is, what do you do for EV? And what do you draft? Remember the 10, this is basically 0 to 20 miles per gallon. This is the miles per gallon that was in that presentation before you. And this was 20
to 40.
To 40. And this was, I guess, 41 plus. And then the question on EV, and there's been numbers flown out. I've heard 150. Heard 125.
What was the average miles? 11,000 a year?
So that's what, and we have to draft something if we're going to do that.
What's the gas tax?
30.
So any thoughts?
30 cents. Yeah, 36.
Representative Bent said it is sort of an arbitrary starting point. It is a scientific wild something guess. Okay. We did ask ODOT, you all have copies and in the presentation previously that outlines how we came to that conclusion, which is the best we could do. And that is a starting point for probably the drafting and then go from there. But I think Senator Johnson has a question there.
I was just going to say, for the purpose of moving us ahead, doing the tiered, and I would put the EV at 150 and we can fight about it later.
Okay. Yeah. LRO wants to add a little bit on the mileage.
I would just point out, if you're looking for a comparison there, just roughly, the gas number, if you're looking at the middle tier there, the average driver would be paying $158, as we said, roughly, in gas. So what they would be paying a year would be $178 a year to use the roads, and what the EV person would be paying would be $150.
Yeah, my preference on the EV would be to keep that number a little bit lower so that we don't act as a disincentive for people to buy electric cars. You know, I mean, they need to pay a sizable amount, but I think $150 is way too high. That has them paying as much as an efficient gas car. I'd rather give them some incentive for being green. So keep that number down below 100.
That's a legitimate point, but we're trying to get equity.
Chair Byron.
Yeah, that's as good as that.
Senator Winters, did you have a comment?
I just said that. Yeah, I said what you said. Doesn't give us equity.
Senator Taylor.
I was just, thank you, Chair Byron. I was just going to say for Senator Monroe that, I mean, the incentives that they're not paying for gas. I mean, that would be the big
difference. Someone over here, okay. I thought. No?
Well, I was just going to say that one of the questions that I'd gotten was, you know, on rebates for what electric cars, like Senator Monroe was saying, what electric cars do for other issues, whether it be air quality or greenhouse emissions or whatever, that I think that anywhere between 100 and 150, but I'm with Senator Johnson. Let's get on to something else.
Okay.
Senator Byer, just quickly about this matter. We have estimated the responsibility of electric vehicles, and it comes to about $89 on today's rates. So that's a starting point, if you want.
Okay.
So, Senator,
we have agreement on that.
So we're going to move back, in other words, move down the list and go back to the discussion of that we had earlier, and that is phasing gas tax in that particular realm. The original proposal that was put out there was 6 cents initially and then 8 cents phased in over. And we're sort of back because we've got a little back onto the discussion that Senator Girard had is maybe it shouldn't be 6 cents, it should be a smaller amount phased out in front of us going the other direction. And so that's sort of where we are right now. I mean, is 6 cents too high? Is 8 cents too high? Is it 4 cents? I mean, this is highway funding. We're in the preservation and maintenance discussion to just sort of give a feel from individuals of what it is we draft initially. And it's not a case of somebody being, say, I'm voting for 10 or I'm voting for 4. It's, you know, what's sort of the range we're looking at to start out in drafting a bill.
Representative Lively.
So I'll start. So the reason I asked the question earlier about the 20-year look, so my concern is, and we heard this enormous amount in our subgroup, about the condition and how far we are behind. So my concern is if, even if it's a lower amount, and I don't think it should be higher, but even if it is, we're going to have to ramp it up faster than if indeed we're going to take a 20-year look, and at 20 years, we're going to be there. And so I would rather get a better start on it now because we can't predict what's going to happen in 10 years. We can't even predict that. So that's my concern is, again, if the goal here is to get back to some normal, we can either do it quicker, start at a higher level and get up there, or we can stretch it and every year we go back to, but I'm just concerned that otherwise we don't have the 20-year look.
Other comments? I would point out, here's another option for you that's been suggested, is that you could do a 4 or 6 cent gas tax initially, and then you could do a couple of years. Senator Girard pointed something out, or you could authorize OTC. Or you could, another option is you could authorize the future legislatures on a triggering mechanism that they had to come back to the legislature, say, in 4 years. You authorize it out 10 years, but in 4 years they have to come back and provide a report or an efficiency report or something along that line. Those are items that have been discussed, too, between the various members. So looking for, do you just stair-step it out? Do you put a triggering mechanism in it, or do we go back that was suggested before, and we say we're going to do 4 or 6 cents now and then authorize OTC to do it later?
Representative McLean?
Well, the first thing I would want to ask is, again, when would the trigger come and what would the trigger be if those were suggestions that were going to be serious? But I do feel that if we are really going to have that planning and that certainty that cities and counties and the state all wanted, that we have to have some ability to know. We know that there can be any kind of a midterm fix or midterm correction, and we know that any a legislature can change it in the future that wants to.
That's true.
But it would seem as if we're really trying to sell the program and the system, that we should lay out what we think the system costs. And that was supposedly why we went through this situation, where we plugged in what were the different types of things that we wanted, how much did they cost, and what did we have to get it. And we didn't get it when we put in 3 cents or 2 cents. We got it when we put in 6 cents with trigger, that went on to 2, 2, 2. So whatever we do, it's got to be whatever's going to pay for what we want.
Only point, I don't know what the triggers are, because I wasn't the one who suggested this, so I'm just asking, and there might be a committee member who has recommended using triggers that have can give an idea of the concept.
Representative Vance?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to go back to Senator Giraud's. He made two or three excellent points, and one of them is the reference can't be need. It has to be political. And if it was need, it would be 41 cents. So just saying, actually, I think the number we finally came up with was 32 cents. But we're at six. So, that's one point. The second thing, though, that he said was we can't forget the low carbon fuel standard. And that's something that we can't just pretend isn't there. Because although it's not going to be impactful in the next couple of years as things currently appear, it will become so within the 10-year term that we're looking at. And so we cannot ignore it. I would just remind everybody that we are discussing cost containment every day until I'm sick to death of it. But that is an absolute important element in this conversation. The third thing he said is that there's a magic to the word 1 billion, and I think we all learned that as we looked at the newspaper articles that came out over the last day or so. And I saw 5 billion, I saw 8 billion, I saw billions everywhere, and no one ever mentioned the fact that there was 10 years involved. So each one of these political issues, terrifically important, and believe it or not, there's a question here. We are talking about the 6 cents, and we have somehow ignored the $5 and $5 registration fee increases. So I don't think we can talk in the 6 cents in a vacuum, and I'm not sure how we discuss it without converting the two $5 numbers into cents, which. I can't remember if we did that.
Yes, we did.
And what was that total for year one?
It's 300 million.
Correct.
So,
but the but each the, your the, chart very nicely calls out how much the equivalent is. Do you know, Director Garrett? Anybody off the top of their head?
I'm looking at it right now. And Mazin's back here. The equivalent of a. The equivalent of a for every dollar of registration fee that you put in equals basically $6 million. And so if you convert that over to the 28 that's there, for every $10 of registration fee it equals 59, which is basically 2 cents. So if you look at the 20 cent to my chart on this side where it says title fee goes up $20, that's basically the equivalent
2 cents.
Of 2 cents in gas tax. So if you have 6 cents that's on this chart here and 20, that's another 2 cents that's on there. And then the next one down is 20 is 2 cents, which gives you a 10-cent increase, which is roughly $280 million, which is where we came up with a $300 million figure. Because there's a few DMV numbers in there that aren't here. So for basically every $10 that you have out there, you're coming up with another penny. So go ahead. So that gives you a little bit of background in there. The question is if you're doing the equivalent of 10 cents the first year, which is roughly the equivalent of 300 million, that's 6 cents, 20, and 20.
So putting it back in context, what we call the tuning fork chart, the start one, the $300 million roughly, so I think it's really 280, is the equivalent of the 6 cents and the $20.
Senator Moreno.
I'm happy with the proposal, the 6-2-2-2-2, and the $20 on the title fee. I'm comfortable with that. I think it's the right place. I'd love to have more, but I think that's the right place to start.
Representative Lively.
I just want to, and I'm sorry I'm speaking so much, but I just have to reinforce
here.
The long-term plan, because what we know in the long term is, regardless how high we raise the gas tax, it's going to it'll be a diminishing source of revenue as efficiency moves up, as more electric vehicles. So I'm going to argue again why we'd want to do and get a schedule to doing that, because we're going to reach a point, even how we've raised it, that the revenue is going to start decreasing. And so we've got to take that into account, too, where we start with this and how fast do you think we're going to catch up. Because, and I don't know what that figure is now, it was 2025, and I'm not sure where the standards are at. But there's a figure out there, again, where because of the efficiency of the fleet, the amount of revenue from gas tax will diminish.
That's true.
Look at the board, that's how it writes out there. But I'd like to go back to better understand, so everybody understands, if you would be kind enough. Senator Drodd's kind of outlined another proposal, which is pushing it out farther and then potentially having triggers on it or having OTC. Would he be kind enough to outline that?
To outline the proposal?
Well, you had put forth a concept, as you said before.
The concept, I represent rural Oregon, so number one, clean fuels is extremely important, as Representative Bent said, and it's easy to say, hey, I didn't really raise your taxes. I basically kept it about the same because of the cost of clean fuels. So if you went to OTC, which will be a lot easier to vote for them to make, and say that they got 3 cents per year capped tax increase, then you can take that out 4 years, and I put a sunset in there. And then if you want to know my proposal, and I just kind of thinking out loud here, there's a lot of things that you guys have come up with that I don't disagree with. The registration fees, 2 years from now we vote on the registration fees. 2 years from that we vote on such and such. If you put it all in one package, there's a saying around here, if you're a pig, you starve. And that's just what it's going to be in one package. And I think you get a lot further by letting OTC do it than having the legislature depend on the legislature to do it, because we haven't done a very good job.
Let me clarify to make sure that we're hearing that I'm hearing that correctly. So what you suggested up to 12 cents over
4 years, which
four
is
years.
Actually more.
So you would say we approve, say, 3 cents, and then authorize the OTC in every 2 years to raise it.
No, every up year.
Or every year up to a maximum amount of 12 cents?
To a maximum
is that what you're saying?
3 cents per year.
How much?
3 cents per year.
3 cents
now,
per year.
Now, I have
year.
To tell you, you're talking 2 cents every 2 years. That just makes up for the COLA. I'm sorry, you're not gaining anything at 2 cents per year. You don't make up for the. I mean, that's all COLA, because the cost of living is 1 cent per year.
Okay. I went to the very last slide, which we're going to get to probably now on Monday night, just so you know. But I do want to point out, because it's been raised by several senators here, let's face the reality, there's some triggering mechanisms inside the bill that have to be accomplished. As was pointed out by Senator Drodd and others, I mean, we still have to figure out, and there has to be a solution to cost transparency and containment and low-carbon fuel standards. There's also the issue of contracting that has to be resolved. All of these are not in this bill here, but they are issues that are out there. And then there's the accountability issue. And I think paramount, before anybody makes any decisions, I would say to most of the members here, and once again, I'm pointing out to the public, is there are triggering mechanisms of things that have to be resolved. We all know they have to be resolved before anybody votes yes or no on this particular plan or in the future. So I just want to make sure that even though we keep referencing low-carbon fuel standards, we've referenced before mm-hmm. contracting, we've referenced accountability, these are all pieces that have to be part of the puzzle to go forward. What we're doing is taking sectors by sectors and places by places just to try and get input so that the people in legislative council can actually do some work on this. So to go back on the board on the right.
Hold on. Yep. We've got a couple people. I just want to note that we got about 18 minutes left before our targeted time to stop for the night, and it'd be nice to get through the preservation discussion before we're done. But we have a couple of people, Representative.
Thank you, Senator. I want to apologize, first of all, that I was in a prior meeting that wasn't able to get here. But I just have to, I just feel the need to respond to the conversation about low-carbon fuel standards. I just want to establish and state clearly that this is a program that is working extremely well, and I want to disagree with the premise that there continue to disagree with the premise that there is a need to involve this in this, when this is a program that has provided economic development. There are businesses coming into this state to establish this. So I want to vocally disagree with that premise.
Okay. Your voice is heard. Okay.
Now, I didn't get to hear what you said before, though, Cliff, so.
I don't know if I disagree with anything that you just said. What I would point out, though, is it's going to have a cost. And this group, as we started thinking about raising gas tax 27 cents over 10 years, cannot ignore that cost.
The cost that we believe is less than a penny per gallon so far?
Actually, the cost next year will be about a quarter of a cent. Hmm. It's in the out years, like four out, when it starts running the possibility of hitting the 19 cent per gallon that the DEQ has estimated. Not my number. 19 cents a gallon. And so what we have to do is be careful that we contain those costs so we can build this package, which is terrifically important, much more than the modest amount of economic development that's been brought by that program to this state. This is light years more important than that. And so we need to make sure we don't let that little program upset this major economic effort. And that what I'm trying to say is we can have both if we do it correctly. And I believe the bill I'm bringing does that. Moving along.
And that's good. That's a good discussion. It's going on in another House committee. We're going to go back to preservation.
I would just remind you, Mr. Chair, that someone has suggested that it be more than just in another committee. I'm not sure who that might be, but it might be you.
I know.
I don't want that to be a surprise.
That to another time. Right.
Thank you.
And since the good representative just walked in, we are on preservation and maintenance, and that topic is farther along on Monday night. So we'll go back to once again, I'm just looking down my list of questions here of where sort of our starting point is. We have the draft spreadsheet that was put out that you guys have seen, which is sort of what's up there, 6, 20, and 20. We've raised the issue of maybe that can be phased one direction, and actually Senator Jodd has raised another phasing issue, which is immediately 12 cents over 4 years. Versus this particular program right here, which actually is only 10 cents over 5 years. So any other inputs and takers for discussion? You have someone right to your right.
Senator.
In order to get us moved on, the spreadsheet that was, and I know there's wide disagreement about this, but the spreadsheet that was presented that gave us all a snapshot in time did 6-2-2 up to a total of 14. We need bill language, and I would suggest that we take the numbers in the spreadsheet for the purpose of the drafters, and we can fight about it in subsequent meetings, but we need to get to a draft where we can seriously talk about whether or not we've got adequate votes for it.
Exactly. That's why we're here. One last topic in the math, and I haven't seen a clock behind me, but one last topic that needs to be raised is the issue is in preservation and maintenance. You saw how it broke down. The question is do we want to bond portions of preservation and maintenance money on the state side for projects? And that's an issue that, you know, we need to have a discussion about. You saw the $45 million equals 600 and some odd million. The question is you have no preservation and maintenance left. Do you want to do if you bonded, do you want to do a small amount? If you don't bond, do you want to pay cash for some projects? And I would point out to you, if you remember, there is a bonding mechanism over in the next discussion on Monday night, too. But people need to keep in mind, I don't think, you know, and there's some statewide significant projects that we have to do, which is part of, you know, the discussion here. But, you know, the question is your preference, do we want to bond? I do want to put on the record, in the city and the county funds, city and county funds, in our work group, we did reach out to both the city and counties that are out there and said, is there a value of bonding a bunch of money and give you lump sums up front? An overwhelming answer we got from the cities and counties, and they'll be more welcome in public testimony later, is that no, they didn't want to bond. They would rather have the steady, constant revenue stream that was pointed out, I think, by Senator Taylor, and have that so they could plan out into the future versus getting a lump sum now or a lump sum someplace else. Any comments or thoughts before we close up, I think, for the evening, because I don't see the clock in terms of bonding?
We got about 12 minutes left. Just to kibitz on that a little bit, keep in mind when we start looking at the improvements on the state system, and Matt can help me out here, I'm just stuck in my mind that every time we talked about a project, the number $80 million came out. And if we wanted to fix the overpass at Aurora, it's $80 million. If we wanted to do the triage in Southern Oregon, it's $80 million. In my mind, when you get to those big bridge projects, things like that, you're talking about an asset that's going to last hopefully 50 years or more now. You probably want to bond that. Otherwise, we don't even have, at the example we had there, you don't even have enough money in the first year to do one of those projects. You do. But just barely. You can do maybe 1.5 if and not do any other maintenance or preservation. A representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to build on the remarks that Senator Boquist and you just made. That I think it gets very confusing over which leg of the tuning fork you are talking about when you move cities and counties into the conversation. Because on the city and county leg, there's not been any suggestion that we bond any portion of their share.
Actually, there was in the work groups.
Say that again, Brian.
In the work groups, there was some discussion about whether they wanted to receive lump sum for county bridges and things like that, which is what we're dispelling and moving off to. Okay, but please continue.
That would not have been the discussion about the bonding number on the
left side.
Right. That would be, would they want to participate, put some of the money in bonding to do on their side?
Right,
and the answer was no.
Right, and I just wanted to clarify that because it gets kind of confusing. But on the state side of the tuning fork, that bonding discussion is a really good one. And Senator Boquist and I have gone around and around on it. And I finally understood his argument, but it's no use making it until we get to your discussion of the new car fee. Right. But I just want to call out that I don't think we can make a decision as to whether we bond any portion of the state share until we talk about the new car fee.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I think what we're going to do is move on to a smaller topic in the last 10 minutes and skip over the congestion one because we won't even get it started. And we will slide down to bike and transit, and I'll change over to that discussion and try and lead us in the last 10
before
minutes.
Before you jump. Senator, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So before we move on, I just want to make sure we're not in consensus then on 6,
no.
2, and 2. We're just having a conversation right now.
Correct.
Yes. Correct.
Correct.
That is exactly correct.
That's correct. That's at least that's what I'm hearing from people.
Senator. I'd like to put even a finer point on it. I don't think any of us are prepared to agree to anything until you see the four corners of the page of the bill. And my understanding of tonight is that we are just giving concepts to the drafters so that we can move forward to get the four corners of the bill. Because I know I'm not in total agreement with this, and even some of the things I've suggested that we draft on are things I'd want to think about once I see how it actually looks in legislative language.
You're absolutely correct.
When we started the meeting, the first comment was we're just trying to get to general agreement as to what to tell the drafters to put in the bill. Nothing, obviously, because we're not voting on anything, is going to be final until you have an actual bill to vote on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And maybe, I don't know, Amendment 29 or 30.
Yeah.
Of 400 pages. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump forward to transit and bike because it is a shorter topic list. You'll recall we had this presentation before. The basic gist of it was this slide that's right before us. This is, of course, another fine issue for political discussion. The proposal that came out of that work group was to create a statewide employee payroll tax of 1/10 of 1%, which helped me out is 0.00.
One.
Okay.
$1 million.
And that was what was put out there. And I think the basic, very first question that we have is we heard across the state a lot of discussion, and that is do we want to take action by doing something like this, not necessarily this, something like this to improve transit services throughout the entire state? That's really the first fundamental question for everybody to think about.
And to be really clear, because it's come up in the last couple of days, people have asked me, the proposal one, the work group talked about this is, this is not talking about putting any money into the new light rail line in Portland. This is not talking about light rail. This is talking about general transit. Senator.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. I just also, in the work group that Senator Beyer, Senator Monroe, and I were in, of course, there's a lot of discussions about all of this, but one of the important things that I just want to remind everybody about was that we talked about, because of the impact of the employee payroll tax, that there was, I know that TriMet's working towards doing a fare box program, you know, for low-income folks in order to pay the bus fare, and that there's different transit districts that have different capacities on that. And so I felt that in the work group that we were thinking about the employee payroll tax, because that would generate revenue to provide the transit, but that we would be mindful of what the impact would be for those who are not just minimum wage earners, but close to minimum wage earners, and the need for there to be either bus passes or to provide some sort of direction for transit agencies to have low wage fares, reduced fares, that type of thing. So I don't see that in there, and I just wanted to get that out there, please. Yeah.
Senator? One of the things that we discussed was that by having this kind of a system that funds transit, you get greater frequency, you get expanded routes, you don't maroon low-wage workers downtown overnight if they're working a graveyard or a swing and they can't get home in the morning. So the characterization that this is just sticking it to the poor, I think, is incorrect, that in fact this is buying them accessibility and frequency and value.
Senator Beyer.
You want to respond? Yeah,
ma'am. Senator Johnson, just to, I'm not by any means in our work group, I don't think that it was, I support having the employee payroll tax. I didn't feel, and perhaps I mischaracterized what I was saying, I was just sharing about the discussion that we had in our subgroup. And in the subgroup, and there are many who are here in the audience tonight, and I think that Senator Monroe and Senator Beyer would also, we had conversations about having there be a little bit of a balance having some sort of wage for a lower fare. I mean, having something to help with the lower fares. So it was not, I don't think it's about sticking it to them. It's just being mindful about what the impact is.
Just to be really clear when we talked about this, this wasn't just a metro issue. Where we heard this was in Bend.
Yes.
We heard it in Medford. We heard it on the coast. And we heard it in Hermiston about people, particularly Hermiston. The businesses there talked about the need to get their employees to the job. And that's what we heard in Bend a lot, was that people were living, having to live farther out because of the cost of housing and couldn't get into the job. It didn't, their wages were such that they couldn't afford a car. Or we heard a lot about people that are disabled and elderly being able to get into a doctor, or, as Senator Monroe said, to church on Sunday. Representative Lively and Representative.
So I just want to make a clarification. This is, so it raises $107 million a year. This is new money, because currently the only money because we can't spend highway funds on transit, and the only money we're currently spending on transit comes from Connect Oregon or the lottery. Or is there some other funds?
Not that much.
Right. But so essentially it's $100+ million in new dollars to invest in transit and the other related items that you have on the list.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Beyer. I have three quick things on this topic because I was not on this work group. First of all, I just wanted to throw out that I'd like us to continue considering employer as well as employee. And as part of that, have we talked at all about a cap on this? Whether it's a percentage or is the idea that it's a one time, that is the percent and it's set, and it would never change?
That was the discussion.
Okay, because the TriMet one is a little more fluid, yeah, so I just wanted to throw that out. Number two, why are we excluding light rail in this?
Why are we what?
Why are we excluding light rail?
It's just a discussion that we had.
Okay. Okay, that's what I was trying to get a sense of. And then I also want to throw out the additional, I know there's been a lot of conversation about the idea of a fee on rideshare rides as another potential source that might be able to get out either outside of the highway fund or maybe inside as another transit source. It's the way that in Portland they fund their entire ride sharing, whether it's taxis or Uber or Lyft. There is a fee on every ride, and that is used to fund the system. And I know there had been some conversations that I wasn't sure. I know they had been in another bill in one of the policy committees, and I just wanted to throw that out again as another revenue source as we talk through the pros and the cons of the ones that have already been brought up.
I know Drew's here. Drew, I can remember, maybe not now, but you can give us some information around that for the next meeting because we're about out of time. Wait a minute, Monroe and then Benz.
Yeah, I was part of this work group. We were looking for a funding source that would be broad-based so as to have a very, very small rate, talking about 0.1%, 39 cents a week for a minimum wage worker, $50 a year for an average wage earner of $50,000. We're talking about massive improvements in transit all over the state, which will dramatically impact especially lower income people, but everybody really. And also, we heard from the transit agencies that will be implementing a portion of this, that they in fact will institute additional plans to get passes and so on to the very poor, the really poor people that need transit. I think this is a critical element to balance this overall package. Given what we heard all over the state last summer, everybody said transit is critical and we don't have enough of it. And so I think without an element like this that has broad base, $100 million a year, that this whole package will come under a lot of attacks as being just for roads and highways.
Yeah. Representative Benz, Senator Winters, Senator Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was actually, I recommended that last sentence not for light rail funding be put in on that slide. That's because I've noticed there's mixed feelings about the new Southern light rail, and I think I'm being kind. And so a number of people come to me and said, we don't even like payroll tax. We kind of think employee may be okay, but if one penny goes to the South Light Rail, then we're going to do whatever. And so this seemed to be not about that. So it seems easy enough to make sure these funds don't get directed in that fashion because it'll add another burden to an already very heavy lift. That's why I said.
The proposal before us is to me very simplistic, which is a good thing, and simplistic in collecting the revenue. And I was thinking if you begin piling on more, and I was looking at the ride share and some of the other features, if you make it too complicated to collect the dollars, I think we're going to defeat our purpose. Just as long as we keep the KISS method, I think that this has a good feel for it.
A smart lady, you know.
Senator Girard?
Oh, I love being the bad guy, but...
You're good at it.
I am good at it. I represent a district that Lebanon's my biggest city. I mean, the vast majority of my district do not live in Metro. And so to ask somebody out in the country to pay 1% if they're working in Salem, or 0.1%, is just an absolute impossible sell. It just really, truly is. I realize that my district, as far as cash flow goes, probably will benefit. But to try to justify it to those people, that the first thing they're going to say is, this is Portland money. And you're either going to have
going to the rural areas.
Well, I said that, Rod. But
yeah, that's what it is.
Well, then I'll tell you what. Why don't you just make it so if you have a transit area, that it's a 0.1% and leave the rest of us out of it?
We have 147 transit areas in the state. I think I may be wrong on that number, but it's about that. Last one, we're after 7, Senator Johnson.
If a package passes and it has this in it, which I support, and there's a new influx of money into transit districts, I hope that there are significant accountability measures, measured on connectivity, on best maintenance practices, adequate and appropriate schedules, fiscal accountability. Little transit agencies have to have budgets that foot and have to be auditable, and best business practices for their boards.
Senator Boquist,
okay,
you want to do two more?
So what we want to do is, because we need that, the drafters need to work from Thursday to Monday night, okay? So we need to slug through the last two slides here for conceptual purposes. Again, we're saying proposal. No, this is for drafting purposes so we can get the four corners of the paperwork. Is generally everybody okay for starting at this point that we was made in the original presentation? Having said that, I just, two quick slides because these are in the components and they have to draft this together. You'll remember Safe Routes to Schools. We said, and it was recommended, that we're going to spend approximately $10 million for Safe Routes to Schools within a quarter mile of the elementary. It's a 10-year program. It's a 40% match. The second thing on the slide there was All Roads Transportation Safety Program. That's 450 dangerous spots. We talked about the work group that came forward spending $10 million annually on that. Is there comments on that? And then we'll have one last slide, and what we want to do is provide the drafting material for them to, because this is being done, drafted in pieces. Any comments on Safe Routes to Schools or on the All Roads Transportation Safety Program?
Representative Lively.
Representative Lively has a comment about Safe Routes to School. I'm fine with the drafting. I'm going to have major questions and suggestions after it's drafted about how this program really needs to work and where it'll do the most good, but I'm fine to start there.
Did you mention that there's a match requirement?
Yes, I did mention there's a match requirement, and it's on the slide. Last slide for the evening. This is off-road biking and walking paths. You point out, just to start out, current law. This is not current law. The current law, as is today, this is an addition, 1% of a new road revenue for bike lanes and sidewalks. That's along roads and so on and so forth. This is actually off-road biking. This was the discussion that came from the work group in terms of $15 million biennium. This is the dreaded 5% excise tax on bicycles. That's bicycles of wheels larger, 26 inches and larger, and more expensive than $500. And then $7 million out of Connect Oregon, and then $4 million out of Parks. That's what came forward from the work group. That's what we're talking about would be drafted for a starting point in the four corners.
And the intent was focusing on commuter paths, not recreational.
Yes.
Obviously, some service find both, but commuter paths.
So the only question I have is that figure. So 5%. If I read this chart, the original chart, correct, 1% of a bicycle tax is $400,000. So they're saying 5%. I'm trying to understand how you get to $4 million. I mean, you can draft it in there, but I just want to make sure the figure, because the original chart you have here.
One's a biennial number.
So every 1% of a bicycle tax makes $403,000.
That's right.
So times 5, and then you do the biennium, comes up with the $4 million. It's $2 million.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson has one more comment, and hopefully I can go directly.
I just want to put on the record that I hope that an influx of money for some of these linear parks for bikes does not exempt them from meeting local standards and local planning, so that we're not just running them through prime farmland or wherever.
I would say that the discussion in the work group is that the standards we were talking about applying is they would have to apply for the money, have a match, and it has to be on an existing plan.
Thank you.
Okay, that is it, colleagues, for the evening. I just want to close one more time with
one more.
I just want to back up. Thank you. I want to back up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to back up Representative Lively on continued interest on the Safe Routes to School and the implementation, also particularly on the education front as well. Feeling that I think a lot of us will have a lot of input into making sure that's as effective as possible. Thank you, Senator Boquist.
Once again, one closing remark. Well, Senator Representative Smith has.
Representative Smith. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be remiss if I didn't start to associate myself with Senator Girard. I start looking at my district, and this is getting to be a pretty big stretch for your rural portions of the state. And so I know if I go into Irrigan or into Lexington or into Umatilla, these small little towns, this is starting to become challenging.
Okay, one final comment, just again for the record, everybody remembers, what we're doing here is having a discussion so that the drafters can prepare a draft. There's nobody committed to anything here. What we're trying to do is get a consensus of guidance for them. No commitments whatsoever. Have a very good weekend.
Thank you, Senator Bowles.
Thank you very much, everybody. Good discussion tonight. We'll continue it on Monday. Mm-hmm. With that, we are adjourned.
So, Mr. Chair, should we just go ahead and issue identical agreements for Monday and Wednesday?
Yep.
With the knowledge that if we don't need Wednesday, we can adjourn.